Welcome to Trust Radio, the Investment Trust podcast brought to you by Janus Henderson Investors. I'm Laura Thomas, and in this episode, I'll be discussing the value versus growth debate with Tom O'Hara, co-fund manager for the Henderson European Focus Trust. This episode is brought to you in association with Janus Henderson Investors. It's for promotional purposes, it's not for onward distribution, and the value of an investment can fall as well as rise. Past performance is not a guide to future performance, and nothing in this episode should be construed as advice. Anything said in this episode is the view of the fund manager when we recorded and may have changed as events have developed over time. Our discussion is for illustrative purposes only, and references made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Tom, thanks very much for sitting down with me today. So Europe has more of a value construct than, say, the US, and the growth versus value conundrum remains fairly central to the trust, which is Henderson European Focus Trust, the stock selection process. Through the latter part of 2020 and most of 2021 so far, value stocks have largely benefited from their sensitivity to an improving economy. But since about mid-May, data has showing that that gap's narrowing. Can cyclicals and value stocks run further, do you think, or is the clock ticking?
I think it's fair to argue that the easy wins from the recovery and beaten up value stocks have been made. But I think rather than a return to that pre-COVID growth bond proxy market leadership, I actually think we're transitioning to a broader market, which means, in other words, stock picking becomes critical again. Why do I think that? Well, we can see a very confused market right now. The Fed in mid-June acknowledged that inflation is higher than expected, and that they may need to raise rates sooner. Even yesterday, we got yet another monthly inflation print, which was higher than expected. And yet, despite all that, Treasury yields have actually been declining on these headlines, which is a little bit counterintuitive and has taken a lot of people by surprise. And effectively, that's the market saying that we're now at peak economic momentum. Inflation will be transitory. Interest rates will stay low. And if that's the case, then you could argue that it's time to return from this holiday we've had in value and cyclicals and go back to that pre-COVID growth bond proxy leadership. But I actually think that would be a massively premature argument to make. And the reason I think that is if we put aside all the noise of Fed speak and monthly data points, and we think about what's different now and in the coming years versus pre-COVID, then there are some quite stark comparisons. And I can think of three main things. Firstly, fiscal austerity, which has been a cornerstone of Western policy after the financial crisis and leading up to COVID, that's dead. And if you look at the US, you look at Europe, you look at the UK, these governments all want to spend. The second thing is that protectionism is on the increase, and often it's now under the veil of environmentalism. So you've got large parts of the electorate blaming globalization for a relative decline in their economic security. And on top of that, the West is increasingly nervous about being dependent on China for production of goods. So I think over time, this means fewer cheap goods into the West. And of course, that's been a constant source of deflation over recent decades. And then thirdly, and it's related to point one and two actually, is that all major regions are pushing for an energy transition. So this is a transition away from dirty fuels like gas and coal in terms of electricity production are moving towards renewable energy, wind, solar power. It's a transition towards electric vehicles. It's a transition towards clean fuels like hydrogen. And all of this is a massive, massive undertaking. It's going to need a lot of metals and raw materials. It's going to need almost a complete rewiring of economies, you know, in terms of the new infrastructure required and all of the labor that will be required to build all that stuff. That's an enormous difference compared to pre-COVID. So activity in the real economy, I think, is going to be far greater in the coming decade than the last one. So even if central banks do keep rates low, which is what the recent movements in the yield curve suggest is the view of the market, I think it'll actually be accompanied by higher inflation. So I don't think you can just go back to that playbook of just owning growth stocks and other beneficiaries of low rates that worked pre-COVID and post-financial crisis. I don't think it's going to work in the same way in future. I think you're going to have to get much more selective on sectors and stocks.
And you've talked recently as well about the trust transitioning towards the end of 2020 from an industrial V-shaped recovery to a consumer reopening V-shaped recovery. Could you elaborate a bit more on that decision, and particularly in the context of value stocks, and whether it's been vindicated by 2021 performance?
Yes, I think it has been vindicated so far, but it's definitely fair to say that that reopening trade has taken a breather of late, and it's related to, firstly, that narrow market or that return to a narrow market leadership because of yield curves coming down. That's been a real feature over the last month. And it's meant that, you know, the tech sector has started outperforming again at the expense of some of these more reopening exposed sectors. And you've also got concerns over the Delta variant. So, you know, if you look over the last couple of weeks, a lot of the international travel exposed stocks have started coming off again. So it is taking a breather. But by and large, I think we're still confident in that consumer V-shape. And what's interesting, certainly in terms of our stock selection of that industrial V-shape, then moving to the consumer V-shape, is many of our stocks that are expressing that consumer V-shape are not actually value stocks. You know, we've got stocks like Estée Lauder, which is effectively eyewear. That's not a value stock when you look at its multiples. Likewise, Inditex, which is Zara, the clothing chain. That's not a value stock. It is a reopening stock. We do have some value stocks in there. So we've got Pandora. We've got Hugo Boss. These will obviously benefit from a resurgence in the appetite to spend amongst consumers. But actually, the reason we own them is not just for that reopening characteristic. It's actually much more stock specific, which obviously is a key feature of our investment philosophy on the trust. You know, it's management change. It's the turnaround of businesses that have been really struggling in recent years. So there's a lot of stock specific idiosyncrasy going on in those stocks. Finally, also related to that, we now own Danone, which is, as you'll know, milk and yogurt, because of that really annoying advert that they used to screen during the 2000s. I can see you laughing there, Laura, so I'm not going to do it because that would be embarrassing. But that's a similar sort of thing. It's been a basket case for business for years now, strategic confusion all over the place. But they've appointed a very highly regarded external CEO from a business called Barry Callebaut, which we've owned in the past. And we think he's got, hopefully, what it takes to turn that business around.
Great. And we touched on inflation a little bit already, but just wanted to focus in on that a bit more for my next question, really, which is, you know, somewhat unsurprisingly, you know, inflation is on the rise almost everywhere, given accommodative monetary policies and as growing demand meets tight supply. Such an environment is typically beneficial for value stocks. Could you maybe explain a bit more why that's the case, whether you see the rise in inflation as transitory or structural, and how that's driven your thinking from a stock and sector perspective as well?
Well, fundamentally, inflation gives pricing power to industries and businesses that at other times might struggle. And in terms of our stocks in our portfolio, I can think of two really good examples. And these are cheap stocks because the market doesn't think they really had or still don't have much pricing power. The first one is steel. So we own ArcelorMittal. Steel prices are currently at all-time highs. Profit margins are at all-time highs. So it's been a major, major beneficiary of this inflationary impulse coming out of COVID, whether that's transitory or otherwise. I mean, the cash generation that ArcelorMittal will make this year is enough to turn what has historically been an over-leveraged business into a business without any debt. You know, that's the scale of the profit impulse that it will get this year, even if it is temporary. It's absolutely game-changing. The other stock is Signify, which is the old Philips lighting business. And again, it's one of those stocks where the narrative historically has been absolutely dominated by the perceived lack of pricing power in selling light bulbs and LEDs. And part of that is, you know, LEDs, you can get them cheap from China. So every year the price came down. It's not a very good recipe for top line growth, which obviously the market likes. But this year, so far, we've seen Signify pushing through sequential increases in pricing for it, for its lighting systems, and they've been accepted. So in terms of the ability to pass on higher raw material costs and then even keep a bit for themselves, that seems to be happening. So that's inflation on a fundamental level and why it can benefit value stocks. From a stock ownership perspective, it's really all about opportunity cost. If you've got higher inflation, it increases the required return you need on an investment. So it tends to lead to more demand for present day profits and cash flows, something you can see with quite clear visibility, and value stocks often have this, and a bit less demand for stocks that are promising you profits and cash flow in the future, which is growth stocks. You know, they might say, well, we'll be profitable in 5 years' time or 10 years' time. So even if it doesn't mean the market decides to sell all growth stocks and suddenly buy all value stocks, it's just a bit of a shift in the balance. You know, it's a bit more demand for one, it's a bit less demand for the other. So in terms of stock ownership, inflation tends to tilt the boat a little bit back towards value stocks.
And lastly, Tom, I wanted to ask you about the distinction between what you've described in the past as deep value and quality value, with Europe being replete, in your view, with the latter. Could you outline the criteria you use in order to distinguish between these two cohorts and perhaps give one or two examples of both?
Yes. Quality value, I think, a really good example or sector example of that within Europe is the industrial champions. You know, the Scandinavian mining capex equipment providers like Sandvik, Epiroc, and the one that we own in our portfolio, Metso. They're a really good example of stocks that have value characteristics in the multiples they trade on. They're certainly cyclical because, you know, the mining, the purchasing decisions of mining companies often goes in cycles, but they're really, really good at what they do. So there's definitely a quality aspect there. They have good market shares. They have margin resilience. They have good balance sheets. That would be a good example, I think, of what we mean by quality value when we're talking about Europe. Deep value, on the other hand, I think is actually, you know, I just mentioned ArcelorMittal and Signify. They're stocks that are very, very cheap because the market just doesn't really trust that they have pricing power, margin resilience through cycle, perhaps some concerns over balance sheet, that sort of thing. Another deep value sector at the minute, I think it would be fair to say, is the oil sector. You know, it's very, very cheap, even though oil prices have gone up about 50% year to date. The oil sector is up about, I think, 12 or 13%. And again, it's the market going, I'm not really sure about what the future holds for oil. Isn't it all getting phased out because everybody's going to be driving around in Teslas? So I'm not going to buy a Royal Dutch Shell, even if it is on a 20% free cash flow yield. You know, that's the sort of, that epitomizes the attitude towards deep value. You know, it's often very cheap and very cheap for a reason. But it's certainly not something we'd avoid. You know, I said we own ArcelorMittal, we own Signify. There's always the opportunity amongst what is perceived to be deep value to find a few diamonds, you know, to find a change story, to find a growth angle in one of these companies that's underappreciated. So, you know, if we are moving to a broader market, that can be really fertile territory for finding those stock specifics, you know, those idiosyncrasies that can generate really good returns.
Great. Tom, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Really enjoyed chatting with you, Tom. Thank you for your time. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, review, and share this with anyone you think will also find it interesting. And if you'd like to learn more about investment trusts, we have a wealth of information available on our website, which you can find in the show notes. Glossary. Accommodative monetary policy. Accommodative monetary policy, also known as loose credit or easy monetary policy, occurs when a central bank, such as the Federal Reserve, attempts to expand the overall money supply to boost the economy when growth is slowing, as measured by GDP. Capital expenditures, CapEx. Capital expenditures are funds used by a company to acquire, upgrade, and maintain physical assets such as property, plants, buildings, technology, or equipment. CapEx is often used to undertake new projects or investments by a company. Cyclical stocks. Companies that sell discretionary consumer items, such as cars or industries highly sensitive to changes in the economy, such as miners. The prices of equities and bonds issued by cyclical companies tend to be strongly affected by ups and downs in the overall economy when compared to non-cyclical companies. Deflation. A decrease in the price of goods and services across the economy, usually indicating that the economy is weakening, the opposite of inflation. Fiscal austerity. The term austerity refers to a set of economic policies that a government implements in order to control public sector debt. Governments put austerity measures in place when their public debt is so large that the risk of default or the inability to service the required payments on its obligations becomes a real possibility. Inflation. The rate at which the prices of goods and services are rising in an economy. The CPI and RPI are two common measures. This is the opposite of deflation. Growth stocks. A growth stock is any share in a company that is anticipated to grow at a rate significantly above the average growth for the market. These stocks generally do not pay dividends. Value stock. A value stock refers to shares of a company that appears to trade at a lower price relative to its fundamentals, such as dividends, earnings, or sales, making it appealing to value investors. Opportunity costs represent the potential benefits an individual investor or business misses out on when choosing one alternative over another. The idea of opportunity costs is a major concept in economics. Treasury yield. Treasury yield is the return on investment expressed as a percentage on the US government's debt obligations. Looked at another way, the Treasury yield is the effective interest rate that the US government pays to borrow money for different lengths of time. Leverage. Leverage results from using borrowed capital as a funding source when investing to expand the firm's asset base and generate returns on risk capital. Yield curve. A yield curve is a line that plots yields, interest rates, of bonds having equal credit quality but differing maturity dates. The slope of the yield curve gives an idea of future interest rate changes and economic activity. V-shaped recovery. V-shaped recovery is a type of economic recession and recovery that resembles a V-shape in charting.
Before investing in an investment trust referred to in this podcast, you should satisfy yourself as to its suitability and the risks involved. You may wish to consult a financial advisor. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The value of an investment and the income from it can fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested. Nothing in this podcast is intended or should be construed as advice. This podcast is not a recommendation to sell or purchase any investment. It does not form part of any contract for the sale or purchase of any investment.
References made to individual securities should not constitute or form part of any offer or solicitation to issue, sell, subscribe, or purchase the security. Janus Henderson Investors, one of its affiliate advisors or its employees, may have a position mentioned in the securities mentioned in this podcast.
Issued in the UK by Janus Henderson Investors. Janus Henderson Investors is the name under which investment products and services are provided by Janus Capital International Limited. Registration number 359-4615. Henderson Global Investors Limited. Registration number 906-355. Henderson Investment Funds Limited. Registration number 267-8531. Henderson Equity Partners Limited. Registration number 260-6646. Each registered in England and Wales at 201 Bishopsgate, London, EC2M3AE, and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. And Henderson Management SA, registration number B22848 at 2 Rue de Bitburg, L-1273, Luxembourg, and regulated by the Commission de Surveillance du Secteur Financier. Janus Henderson, Janus Henderson, Perkins, Intech, Velocity Shares, Knowledge Shared, Knowledge Shared, and Knowledge Labs are trademarks of Janus Henderson Group PLC or one of its subsidiaries. Copyright Janus Henderson Group PLC.